WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. The search for a mass shooter in Georgia has ended. Atlanta police say they've arrested 24-year-old Deion Patterson, who allegedly opened fire in a medical facility waiting room.
This accused gunman walked in and shot at the reception desk and into the waiting room. And then I'm told that some of this activity continued into the hallway right in front of the elevators that take you down to the lower levels.
ABC Steve Osunsami in Atlanta, one woman killed. Federal Reserve raising interest rates again, this time another 0.25% as it tries to cool inflation even further. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell taking to the floor to criticize President Biden for refusing to take action on the debt ceiling.
Months of inaction from President Biden have left our nation drifting toward economic disaster.
President Biden saying he won't talk about raising the debt ceiling if it's tied to spending cuts that Republicans insist on. This is ABC News. Federal prosecutors say they've arrested a former FBI supervisory agent on charges he joined the January 6th mob and cheered on rioters attacking police. Regulators want to stop Meta from making money off collecting data on minors.
The Federal Trade Commission now says it wants to make some changes to a 2020 order which instituted a new privacy structure at Meta. TechCrunch's Devin Coldaway.
Proposing to completely prohibit Meta from monetizing data from anybody under 18.
He says it comes as both Facebook and Instagram face threats from newer competitors like TikTok.
This would be just another sort of kick them while they're down moment.
In a statement to ABC News, Meta called the FTC's move a political stunt. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
Texas Congressman Colin Allred says he's running in the Democratic primary for the Senate seat currently held by Republican Ted Cruz, former NFL linebacker first elected to Congress in 2018. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Bug Tussle is building out the best fiber network in rural Wisconsin to deliver ultra-fast fiber internet where others can't or won't. Based in Wisconsin and backed by local support, Bug Tussle is bringing fiber internet services to your area at an honest price without any contracts or data caps. Call 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924. Or visit btussle.com and get connected with Bug Tussle today for internet, cellular, and entertainment.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinere. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin will get over $300 million as part of a settlement in a multi-state lawsuit accusing drug makers and distributors of contributing to America's opioid crisis. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee approved a motion to accept the money on Tuesday, with 30% going to the state and 70% going to county governments. Earlier this year, a settlement was reached with opioid manufacturers Teva and Allergan, as well as with pharmaceutical chains Walmart, Walgreens, and CVS, totaling over $19 billion. Accepting the settlement also requires the companies make major changes in how prescription opioids are sold and dispensed. If you filed your taxes on time and are waiting for a refund from the state of Wisconsin, you can check on the status at the Wisconsin Department of Revenue website. I'm Jane Matinere. This is Civic Media News.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't going to find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't going to find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup. You're listening to a radio station that's part of the Civic Media Network. Find more at civicmedia.us.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't going to find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't going to find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter. Your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us.
Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to start off with Geraldo Rivera. Honestly, I did not know he was still around, but Geraldo had a couple of interesting tweets. Now, we've heard from Republicans for a couple of years now, you know, it's all about Hunter Biden, all about laptops and, you know, the big guy and 10%. I can't tell you how many talk radio memes people have thrown at me. And yet nothing in the way of well, anything. And, you know, all of these hearings we were promised, all of the smoking guns that were going to be there. We even have a weaponization committee that was supposed to be breaking all of this stuff. It was supposed to do road shows, and it was supposed to be good. And look, I was looking forward to it. I mean, I was looking forward to see exactly what they had, because we've heard the hype. Lots of hype. And what Geraldo said today is, he tweeted out, he goes, "Does anybody really believe President Joe Biden was involved in a criminal bribery scheme? Dollars to donuts. It's another bogus, blowhard, pretend whistleblower. Hint, if the person announcing a would-be criminal scheme is a partisan politician, it's a partisan political event." And this is one of those things where you go, yeah, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. He said, "Proof is in the pudding, brother. Put up or shut up. Hunter's been under the microscope for 4.5 years. He's not been credibly accused of money laundering, influence peddling, or really any of the rumored offenses, except for being a womanizer." He uses a different phrase, a dope-addled, deadbeat dad. And those, yeah. But if that were the, think of how quickly Congress could find its way to clear out. But here's the thing, and this is, we were told In 2020 and 2022, especially, about all of this, you know, all this, there are crimes and we're going to get them. And all we've really gotten, because I was expecting them to have something. Because look, if Hunter Biden, you know, did all these things that they're accusing him of, you know, okay, you know, let's see it. As I said from the very first time that I saw anything about this, that's Hunter Biden. If he broke the law, he will be held accountable. I don't know how this equates to Joe Biden. You haven't made that connection. There's no direct link. Okay, Biden used the last name of Biden. Yeah. Name a politician whose kid doesn't. I remember the first one who did, Billy Carter, because Billy Carter came out with Billy Beer. Roger Clinton. I mean, we can go down the list of all of the folks who tried to cash in on their name. That's not a crime. And there is no direct link. And this is what's, again, I come back to, remember all the election nonsense that they were spewing on talk radio and on the F channel and even the worst ones? You got the Kraken lawyer, what was her name? Sidney Powell, going on, you know, about we have all this stuff. And then they went into that room where that person with the black dress sits up on the little box, has that stick that he bangs against the table. And then they bring out that book, you know, that book, and they make you put your right hand, you put your hand on it, and you swear, it's your left hand, right hand up, there you go, and you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but truth, so help you your God. And they went into that room, and they said nothing that they had told me just a second before on the other side of that door, something about that magic door. And we're in the same kind of situation. They're making all of these claims, all these promises, all this stuff, and we've got none of it. And instead, what we've gotten is an attempt to recreate the 19th century, an all-out attack on democracy and an end to that thing that every American believes in as a child to their core, and I still believe in. You know, that Declaration of Independence theme of you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No, not in the new GOP world. And you look at the things that have happened, all of the attacks on voting, because, well, they believe the election was stolen. In fact, you got Carrie Lake still running around saying was it governor? She's governor, but going to run for Senate. You figure that out. I can't. You got Trump still saying he won. You got, you know, a large percentage of the Republican Party going, hey, he won. We know it. He was cheated. And what they're doing is they're passing all kinds of laws, blocking people from early voting, blocking drop boxes, you know, going after. You can't even hand out a bottle of water in Georgia to someone on the voting line because it's bribery. I've handed out things online. People I've never met. I have never met a single person who's gotten in line to vote without knowing who they're going to vote for. I've never met someone who goes, I hand them some literature and they go, wow, I hadn't heard of this person. You know, maybe this, I'll vote for, you have changed my mind. It's never happened. But here we are. You've got a Republican Party going after election workers. They're going after the entire mechanism of casting a ballot. Why? To make it harder on poor and working class people. We're going to have one drop box per county. That's it. How insane is that? And that's not even the worst of it. You think of all of the things that they're trying to do around education, banning books, all of this craziness around the theory about race that's critical. Because we can't teach history, all of this anti-gay stuff. You go, seriously? This is what you've got? And you go down the list and look at Florida. Florida passed a law saying you can't say gay in K through 3. And then somehow, miraculously, that went from K through 3 because the children are too impressionable to know that there are people who are different. Now it's K through 12. Again, doing a whole bunch of stuff that I don't quite know that is good for the country. And then you throw in Roe versus Wade, you throw in all of the abortion bans across the 6 weeks, 8 weeks, Texas with its bounty hunter law. You know, start going through every woman's trash can because you never know. You might strike gold because you're going to get $10,000 reward if they miscarried or had an abortion. It's crazy. They're going after contraception. There's even talk of ending no-fault divorces. I mean, and that's not even talking about the child labor bills that they're ramming through. Guns everywhere. Guns, guns, and more guns. You know, permitless carry stuff. Easier access. Can't have any obstruction between me and my gun. And look, we're shooting kids for ringing a doorbell. Every day there's another shooting. You go, every day there's someone rang a doorbell, someone walked across the lawn, someone's ball rolled into somebody else's yard, somebody looked sideways at someone. It's crazy. And again, all of this division, all this anger, you know, it's all about Joe Biden's a criminal. You think about all of the voucher schemes and the private school privatization schemes that have popped up. And now you've got Florida attacking pronouns. I guess pronouns are bad too. And the weird thing is we now live in this really polarized world of, you know, red hat, blue hat. And as I keep saying, you know, the reality is we, the sane, rational middle, had better put on a hard hat because we got a lot of rebuilding to do. These people are tearing apart our democracy. They're tearing apart this country. And why? Quite frankly, it's so that they can have more. You go back to the Trump years, the only legislation that got through, the only legislation that mattered, was a massive welfare tax bill for the very wealthy. And whatever did trickle down to the rest of us has expired or will expire in another year. But those corporate tax breaks, those tax breaks for the very wealthy, oh, those go on and on and on. And what's so frustrating is, depending on where you get your news source from, we're buying those lines. We're demonizing each other to the point to where if you don't agree 100% purity, you're now canceled. And truth doesn't seem to matter anymore. I mean, politicians used to, and this is one of those weird things. Politicians used to, at least when they lied, there would be some kernel of truth. When there was a lie, they would just blow something up out of much bigger proportions. Now we're just making stuff up as we go. You know, 10% for the big guy. Well, nobody knows what that means. And who's the big guy? Did we get a clarification on that? Other than the I believe folks? Here's what I know. I look at someone like Ron DeSantis, who scares me. And I said this when Trump was president. I said I didn't worry so much about Trump because he didn't know the mechanisms of government. He didn't know how to get things done. He caused a lot of noise. He threw a lot of you-know-what against the walls. He had temper tantrums. He threw his Twitter fits. There was all that stuff. But he didn't do an awful lot of damage or as much as he could have. DeSantis is the kind of guy who understands the power of government, who understands the power of changing laws to benefit himself. Understand, the Florida legislature just passed a bill that would shield taxpayers, citizens, any oversight whatsoever of, or not just DeSantis, but any top elected official from their travel records. Now, remember, you got this whole Clarence Thomas thing going on, you know, taking all these trips. Now they're going to shield DeSantis and the legislature from any oversight. Remember when they passed the law that said if you're a blogger, just a guy on the internet writing something on Facebook, if you write something about DeSantis, the legislature, or the DeSantis administration, you've got to register with the state. Now, there used to be an F word for all those things. You know, going after corporations that you don't agree with because, you know, they have gay people working in those costumes. You know, there used to be a word for that. Began with an F. And DeSantis, and for me, has always been that. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Are you still hopeful that something will come, that there will be the weaponization committee's big smoking gun moment, or just a dud? It's been kind of a dud. But what did you expect? It's Jim Jordan. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the show, we talked about the McDonald's in Kentucky with all of the child labor law violations and the hundreds of thousands of dollars they're going to have to pay. And the one thing that got a lot of people's attention was the fact that there were two 10-year-old kids who were working at the McDonald's up until like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I said yesterday, I'm not really sure the conditions under which these 10-year-old children were in the McDonald's at 2 a.m. We now got a little bit more information out of this, and it turns out that they were the children of employees of the management. And now remember, the management in the fast food industry, they're what's known at as the bottom of the hill. You ever heard that saying, you know, that some substance rolls downhill? Well, it's those folks at the bottom who get slapped right in the face with it because they've got to stay, you know, and make sure everything's done and no matter how long it takes. And they don't get overtime because they're management. They've got the cute little title, got a little pin with the word management on it. So is it surprising that they would then enlist the labor of their children to help them get home faster when they don't have enough staff, when they don't have people who are you know, either scheduled or didn't come to work, whatever, that it would then fall back on the children? Now, as we've been talking about this Iowa bill of putting kids into dangerous situations, this idea of repealing and rewriting the 20th century to get kids back to work, everyone keeps going, but parents, the parents would stand up for their kids. As I said yesterday, parents had to make the choice to send their 5 and 6-year-olds into the mines, knowing that there was a fatality rate for them of 50%. Desperate families will do desperate things. You know, in this country, one income used to support a family. My grandparents' generation, you could survive on one income and lead a pretty good life. In fact, we had a whole television industry, Leave It to Beaver and all of them, you know, one income, dad goes off to work, mom's home with the pearls and the dress, you know, vacuuming happily, and the 2.3 kids running around in the picket-fenced areas. We used to be able to do that on one income. They took vacations, they bought cars, they did sent kids to college, they did all that, one income. Then the wealthy said, we don't like this anymore, we want more. And began breaking unions, began attacking the tax code, began restructuring and redistributing the wealth that was created in this country so that the working people didn't get as much. It came to them. And then we went through the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and two incomes. Mom had to go into the workforce, you know, maybe part-time at first and then full-time. And now you're fully, you know, the last 20 years, two incomes. You don't have a choice. I argue right now we're moving towards an era where two incomes aren't going to do it anymore. We now need three, maybe four. And this is where having kids now, we're gonna start putting them back into the workforce so that we can make ends meet. And this is what conservative world has brought us. This idea that, oh, you know, the parents know best. I don't know about that so much. Especially when you're talking about desperation. And I look at this story, 10-year-olds, you know, working till 2 a.m. Not because they want to, but because they have to. And the policies I see coming out of the Republican Party are making this worse. So what we're doing is we're banning abortion so we have more children. If you remember Tom DeLay, the hammer, congressman from Texas, you know, famously saying, you know, if we outlawed abortion, we wouldn't need immigrants. We'd have those 40 million babies, and that's our cheap labor. Because, again, it's none of this moral stuff that they keep shoving down our throats. It's all economic. It's all more for them and less for all of us. So when they start cutting unemployment benefits, when they start cutting food stamp programs like they're doing at an alarming rate, when they start gutting child labor laws, they're telling you who they are. When they cut education funding, they're telling you who they are. When they're privatizing education, they're telling you who they are. Their vision for this country is desperation for the working class. At a time where, and we're not talking about this at all, where AI is going to basically eat the lunch of the working class. And then what's next? How much more desperation can they peddle? I've argued for years that our Supreme Court is moving us back towards the good old days of the Lochner era, where if you were hungry enough and desperate enough to work in poverty conditions for desperation wages, that is your right. That is your liberty. Ask any conservative lawyer. He'll tell you they believe that the end of Lochner was the worst thing that happened for the working class of this country because it made them soft, got them to join unions and expect a fair share of what their labor creates. But here we are in this moment, and we are decidedly at a which side are you on moment. As the wealthy and the powerful decide what they get, everything, the rest of us are still eating each other and picking at the bones, if you will. And I don't see it getting any better until we begin to rise up. I look at what's going on in France. For me, you know, the workplace is where we come together and say, you know, we demand better. In France, they've put down some of their right-left stuff. And they're going, look, they're coming after us economically. When you can get 2 million people into the streets, that's pretty impressive. Can you do that here over something like Social Security? Over child labor laws? What's interesting to me is, there are conservatives who justify 10-year-olds working. It's good for them, builds character. Those are the same ones who know, how old was the kid? 12 years old, getting 12-year-olds getting married? And he was very proud of the fact that he knows 12-year-olds who have gotten married, and they're still together. So stop and think of where the policymakers in control of legislatures across this country. And they're Republican legislatures. You don't see Democrats doing this. Look at where they want to take us. For the people who talk about groomers and pedophiles and all of that stuff, look at what they're doing. 12-year-olds getting to be able to marry, 10-year-olds being able to work. We're going to put children on the kill floor of the meat processing plants. Seriously? And the answer is yeah. That's where they want us to go. All under the guise of us hating each other. It works. It does. It sadly, it works. I'll tell you, I don't want my kids in those situations. I don't want my kids in dangerous situations as adults, let alone kids. I don't want them to get married until they're financially, physically, mentally, emotionally prepared for it. This idea of a 12-year-old being prepared mentally, physically, financially. Wow, what are these people on? And how do we get them out of office? And this is where the people who go, ah, they're all crooks. It's time to get it. It's time to get involved. It's time to pay attention. Because you may wake up where in a world that you don't recognize. I fear we're heading there. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1911. That was the day the state of Wisconsin passed the Wisconsin Workmen's Compensation Act. The state became the first to have a constitutional system for providing medical expenses, wage loss payments, or death benefits to employees or their families. The law is regarded as a pioneering act of social legislation and a major accomplishment of Wisconsin's progressive movement. Activist journalism exposed deadly and disfiguring working conditions in the country's industries. State industrial commissions were established to conduct factory inspections and demand reform legislation and regulations. Upton Sinclair's initial intent in writing The Jungle was to cultivate a public outcry for better and safer working conditions. By 1907, the Russell Sage Foundation funded dozens of investigators to study industrial and social conditions in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Two volumes of essays were produced, entitled The Pittsburgh District, Civil Frontage, and Wage Earning Pittsburgh. The essay Work Accidents and the Law, written by Crystal Eastman, exposed the enormity of work-related accidents and deaths and the failure of employers to compensate victims and their families. Her investigation examined several industries, including railroads, steel, and coal mining. She noted, quote, "There is no bright side to this situation. By industrial accidents, Allegheny County loses more than 500 workmen every year, of whom nearly half are American-born. 70% are workmen of skill and training, and 60% have not yet reached the prime of their working life. Youth, skill, strength, in a word, human power, is what we are losing." Eastman's survey worked to shift the burden from workers to employers. It is largely credited with the passage of workers' compensation laws, though it would take decades for similar laws to be enacted in states throughout the nation.
When public officials get themselves mired in the muck of corruption, they can always count on Senator Ted Cruz to issue a moral judgment. If the offender is a Democrat, he pronounces the corruption inexcusably grotesque. If it's a Republican, he wails that the offender is the victim. For example, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was recently caught, yet again, butt deep in judicial immorality, taking hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of freebies from a Texas real estate baron who has both a partisan and corporate interest in Thomas's court rulings. So, Cruz to the rescue! "No judicial impropriety here," he squawks, "for this is nothing but a diabolical plot by Democrats to smear poor Clarence." But Thomas is busy smearing himself, so Dems can just take the advice of Woodrow Wilson: never attempt to murder a man who's committing suicide. From the start of his court tenure, Thomas has been a shameless seeker of personal gain, tucking untold sums from untold sources in the inner pockets of his judicial robes. He learned to hide his corruption in 2004 when he actually reported taking pricey gifts from a special interest, which got him widely condemned. So, he reformed. No, he didn't quit taking gimmies, he just quit disclosing them. Thomas is a supreme grifter, but sadly he's not alone. Many recent justices have fallen from the pedestal of judicial integrity, cozying up to the moneyed interests. Gifts aside, we now have a hyper-partisan right-wing Republican majority taking their judicial opinions from those same interests, turning America's unelected third branch of government into an autocratic, plutocratic political agency. Then they wonder why their public approval rating and legitimacy are in the ditch. This is Jim Hightower saying, since they won't reform themselves, we must do it for them. To help, go to fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the Writers Guild still on strike. And look, it's evidently causing headaches for the TV studios. And that's good. I mean, that's the point. The point is that it's It's the last arrow in the quiver. It is the last, you know, the last chance to get to jumpstart negotiations and get people back to the table and willing to negotiate. I was looking at some of the proposals, and it was, you know, the union was proposing, hey, we want, you know, this is where the money is being coming from. We want a portion of that. Here's our proposal. What's your counter proposal? And the counter proposal is nothing. You know, this, as I was reading through the document that was put out by the Writers Guild, I'm like, it seems like the studios want this strike. It, because look, if you're going to at least, you know, negotiate in bad faith, you're going to come back with something of a proposal. It's going to be something that nobody's going to want, but you're going to say, hey, at least I tried. To come back and say nothing, that I don't know, that kind of is moving in the wrong direction. I do find it interesting, and why I like Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers. It's being reported that they are going to partially pay the writers and provide health insurance for their writers until September. And that's coming out of their pockets, as I understand. That's pretty impressive to me. And this is one of those things where if other people help, maybe this is a shorter strike. You know, the old saying of, you know, the bigger the strike fund, the shorter the strike. That matters when these studios or when any employer knows that the employees aren't going to be starved back and wanting to take whatever they're being offered at some point. Maybe they don't engage in this kind of behavior. And it reminds me of, you know, when I was younger, and I first started working, I got my first union job. An old timer, you know, put his arm around me and said, "Kid, I'm gonna set you straight." And they said, the first thing that you do is before you get used to spending all this money you're going to be making, take 6 months of your bills, shove it in a sock, in a candy box, in a coffee can, in the bank somewhere, but have 6 months of liquid money at hand at all times. And this isn't just for union members. This is I say this for anybody. In this day and age, you got to have, the pandemic showed us, you've got to have a little bit of wiggle room. You've got to have a little bit of, hey, something bad happened. There's a bump in the road. I'm not going to be homeless. Sadly, we're a society where, you know, way too many people a week or two or 3 weeks away from real economic catastrophe if they lose a couple of paychecks. And that has a lot to do with the fact that wages have been stagnant for so long and workers aren't making the wages that they should be getting paid for what they do. And, you know, it just got me thinking that, you know, this is that moment where as a society, we have to decide. Again, that what side are you on moment? And, you know, I was looking through, you know, the things that happened today in history. And everyone, at least everyone in my age bracket, remembers for the first time seeing the photographs and the video footage of Birmingham in 1963. It was May 3rd, 1963, when, you know, the famous photos of people, black people being hit with water cannons and the dogs being sigged on them and just horrible treatment. And you look at the New York Times the next day, dogs and hoses repulse Negroes at Birmingham is the headline. You know, violence explodes at racial protests in Alabama. And you go, no, violence didn't explode. These were children. These were peaceful protesters who were assaulted by the police. And it got me thinking, you know, as we were talking about earlier, this attack on education, this attack on the working class of this nation and the education we get, be it labor history or civil rights history, or history in general. What we've got right now, and this is the weird thing that's going on. We've got big moneyed interests funding these attack groups who their sole purpose is to strip all of this from their kids' minds. The theory being, and again, I remember seeing these photos for the first time. I remember seeing these videos and being horrified
that people could be treated in that manner. It didn't make me feel bad about myself. I didn't do it, had no part of it. It made me empathetic. It gave me compassion to know that this is our history. And part of that was, we can't allow this kind of behavior ever again. That's what learning history is about, learning the lessons of the past. Yet what we have are people who hell-bent on, you're not. And look, part of me believes they'd like to recreate the past just as it was. Maybe that's part of the reason that they don't want their children to learn about the real history of this country. The good, the bad, the indifferent, the ugly, the beautiful. It's all important. But I remember, you know, 2013, we did a labor history tour where we traveled the country in search of labor's history. 2015, we did a civil rights tour. And in all of those places that we went, in each and every one of those places, the history had been manipulated, especially on the labor side, especially on the worker side. Corporatized, sanitized, rewritten in a way that didn't make corporate America look so bad. On the other side, the civil rights tour we did, what we found is we went to a lot of places where black people were treated horribly. And there is now a museum, an institute, a center. There's a tourist trap. There's a tourist attraction. And when I was looking at the pictures of Birmingham on this day in 1963, I put myself in that space. And there is an incredible civil rights institute there, just an amazing place where you can actually touch the jail door that Dr. King was behind when he wrote the letters from the Birmingham jail. The tank that Bull Connor used was actually on display. You could touch it. And I think where we are right now and the disservice that we're doing to our children and the future generations by not teaching real, actual history, just a sanitized version of hooray for us, more like propaganda as opposed to history. It's a disservice to us and our future. I remember going through that Civil Rights Institute. And look, Ahmed, the guy who was the curator, was fantastic. And if anyone's ever in Birmingham, make sure that you make it to that Civil Rights Institute. But in there, and it's one of these moments that I will never forget, because it's right across the street from where the 16th Street Baptist Church is, the one that was bombed, that the four little girls were murdered in. And we did this tour, and, you know, I'm not an emotional person. But we got to this little display case, and I've told this story before. You know, our kids were smaller at the time. And there's a small display case, and in there were the belongings of a couple of the little girls who were murdered. And there was a little clutch purse in there that had a handkerchief and some little trinkets and things that my own daughters would have had in their little clutch purse, if you will. And it hit me right then that this is tragic. This could happen to anyone. This could happen to families today. And that we have to learn from this. And yet there is a movement. There's a movement in my community to overtake the school board. There's a movement across this country to drill down and take over the school boards. Look, the moneyed interest with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, they've done a masterful job of dominating state legislatures. There's an ALEC version at the county and city level, ACCE, I think it's called. They do a masterful job of drilling down to your local, your mayors and your council people. They invite them to big shindigs. They give them model legislation. They train them on the right way to legislate, which is the corporate way. And now you've got the moneyed interest drilling down to the local school boards. And it's not, hey, the good old days when it was about, hey, we want to pay less taxes, going to make the schools, you know, we're going to have to make the schools, you know, use that quarter a little bit more judiciously, squeeze it till the eagle screams. Because that's what school boards used to be, local business people who didn't want to pay any taxes, but still cared enough about the schools that their kids went to that they didn't completely defund and destroy them. Right now, we're in a moment where there's a movement of people who want to destroy public education, want to tear it apart. Under the guise of we're protecting the children. We're going to take those bad books out. We're not going to learn about that, you know, that theory about race that's critical. Not going to do that. And those groomer teachers that, you know, we used to call heroes and we used to call essential. Now they're just groomers now. We're supposed to hate. As well as, you know, defunding public schools. Because, again, a lot of these Moms for Liberty groups and a lot of these groups that are going after this, it's all about vouchers now. It's all about, you know, charter schools and all privatization. It's not about making your local public school better. It's not about running it more efficiently. It's not about any of that. It's about ideology. I found it interesting. One of the candidates locally, her name was Paula Broussard, I believe. She is on the school board, and if you're listening locally, I endorse the same ticket that Paula Broussard is on, because she told my wife something that, you know, my wife passed on to me that I thought was really interesting. She made a point of saying that during the pandemic, when the ARPA money was coming out, when the money going to schools to help them, you know, deal with the pandemic and help, you know, get through all this, that they actually used that money for transportation to get kids into summer school programs to help them catch up, to help them, you know, get on grade level. They did it, you know, the way my wife explained it to me, you know, they had hundreds of kids come that normally wouldn't have because they were able to pay for the transportation and do all these things by using the money the way it was supposed to be, to use it in the school system, not for tax cuts that they gave away, not for sweeteners for contractors or whoever else they waste money on, but for actually in the school. And for me, that's what I want from a school board. I want them to do the work of ensuring that resources are where they're supposed to, that programs are where they're supposed to, that opportunities for our kids to do better, not just in my neck of the woods, but all across this country, because that's how we're going to grow as a society. That's how we're going to be able to create an economy and a political system of critical thinkers. And I know the right doesn't want that, because if you're a critical thinker, you're going to look at the black and white binary nonsense that they keep trying to shove down our throats and go, that's not who we want to be. That doesn't square with life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Your narrow-minded viewpoint doesn't square with living my best life. And this is why we have to turn education from their point of view into read and write and arithmetic. As George Carlin famously said, just smart enough to shuffle the papers and run the machines, but not smart enough to realize how bad they're getting screwed over. Good little worker bees who are going to stay in a line and do what they're told. Except, you know, if it means protecting themselves. So I'm in this place right now that, as a country, we're in pretty dire situation, because the moneyed interests have decided that they want to take us back to the good old days. Good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. They want to take us back to the puritanical age, where women will be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen, blacks will be in the fields, and gays back in the closet. And white men, of which I am one, rule the world. If that's the world that you want, there's a party for you. For everybody else, you're on the other side. Very clearly, the old labor frame, which side are you on? Going to be interesting to see as this plays out, because it's not going to get any better anytime soon. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the birthday of folk musician Pete Seeger. Seeger and his music would become staples of the U.S. labor movement. He was born into a musical family. His father was a scholar of musicology, and his mother was a concert violinist. During the 1940s, Pete Seeger joined with folk music legend Woody Guthrie to form the Almanac Singers. The band traveled the country supporting the Congress of Industrial Organizations. At picket lines, union meetings, and workers' rallies, Pete Seeger was there providing the music for the movement. In the 1950s, Seeger became the target of the anti-communist hysteria that swept the nation. He was blacklisted, shows were canceled, he lost a recording contract. Yet despite this repression, Seeger kept singing the songs of working people and standing up for justice. During the 1960s, the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the environmental movement all marched to Pete Seeger tunes. When Seeger died at the age of 94, labor leader Jen Fuentes reflected on the impact of his music in an article in USA Today. She said, "These songs are what allowed workers to sustain themselves during times of adversity. He's a legend in the labor movement for his folk music that has spoken to the labor struggles throughout the year."
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a union man.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something in your mind, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are we doing today?
Oh, we're doing okay.
What's on your mind?
So, well, for one thing, I wanted to talk about, you were talking about 1963, and believe it or not, I remember some of that going on. Like I said, I'll be 63, but my dad would always watch the news, and that they would have it on the news, you know, what was going on down in Alabama and Mississippi and whatnot. And I can remember watching that and being horrified. And my parents were just horrified about, you know, the dogs being sent at these people and the children being attacked and the water hoses. And it was just horrid. I can remember that clearly.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, we didn't learn a lot of this in history. I mean, there was some of it, and I remember seeing it, you know, in history books and being presented. And, you know, there's a part of me that goes, I understand why some would not want us to see that kind of history and want it forgotten in the past. Same thing with the Holocaust. Same thing with a lot of horrible, tragic moments in the past, simply because I believe they're okay with it happening again.
Well, I tend to agree with you because, you know, when you have this kind of stuff going on, some people like to brag about it later on, but some people like to hide it and then hope people forget about it because, you know, you might want to try it again. So it's just horrifying. It is. But I don't know. This Republican Party it has ceased to be the Republican Party and has become some sort of twisted alternative party of bigots, racists, homophobes, and fascists. I mean, it's just terrible. Yeah, but have a good evening.
Appreciate the time, Alice. Thanks so much. I got an email from Murray. Murray listened on KTNF in Minneapolis. He says, Rick, I'm sure you saw Ted Cruz pointing out your hypocrisy. Turns out your liberal icon, Justice RBG, took 157 trips, including 28 international trips, and Justice Stephen Breyer took 233. Clarence Thomas only took 119 trips and 5 international trips. Get your facts straight. Here's the difference, Murray. Those people reported them. I know. They reported it. That's how you know about it. We're just learning about Clarence. This is my problem. And my other problem is this. I never said that it was just Clarence Thomas. Never did. I think that any of these justices taking any of this stuff should be held accountable. The appearance of impropriety is there, that they're bought and paid for. And the joke had always been, based on their decisions, that they should be wearing patches like NASCAR drivers. So you didn't get me, Murray, because I didn't say everyone was as pure as the driven snow. But one guy didn't report anything. So there's that. Now, Ted Cruz, I think Murray got this from Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz said something along those lines. And we find out today that he's going to have a challenger in 2024, and that is Colin Allred, a former NFL linebacker, now congressman. And he's got a new video out. It's 3 minutes long. It's well worth the watch. But in that, he uses the Texas line that, you know, Ted Cruz is all hat and no cattle, which I thought was, which is great, because he said, look, he goes, when January 6th was happening, he goes, you know, I took my jacket off and, you know, we may have to take some people to the ground. He's like, you know, I thought I gave up on that when I left the NFL, but, you know, going to have to protect the people in my office. Whereas Ted Cruz, who was out there, you know, basically, you know, pumping these people up, feeding the fury, feeding the anger, was hiding in a supply closet. And you go, that makes sense. What I find amazing about January 6th, and this is one of those things that, you know, no one has really talked about. What I've always found amazing is the Josh Hollies, who was out there doing the fist pump, and Lauren Boebert, you know, today 1776, and you know, and Marjorie Three Names, and Ted Cruz, and the rest of them. Why didn't they go out into the crowd? They were clearly the patriots of the moment. They could have quelled some of this. They could have done something to protect their colleagues, but they didn't. They ran and they hid like cowards. They caused this flame. They started it, and then they hid. They ran and hid. And it's because, quite frankly, they knew what they had started was out of control. And that, I believe it's what they wanted. And now we're finding out that through some tapes that Ted Cruz was kind of advising on how to not certify Joe Biden and all of this. But I look at someone like Ted Cruz. Should he be in the U.S. Senate? I'm hoping the good people of Texas, I'm hoping they take him out. Because this guy, Colin Allred, he seems like the real deal, man. You know, raised by a single mother, you know, worked his way up, credits, you know, his family, YMC counselors, coaches, to keeping him on the right track. Learned important lives through athletics and school. This is the kind of guy that you want in the Senate. This is the kind of guy working class people need in the U.S. Senate. Someone who knows what it's like to have the cupboards bare, who knows what it's like to see a struggling mother, to know what it's like to have to struggle and to go without. and probably, I'll bet you, more likely to help and to help move in a direction that's going to make lives better as opposed to continually ripping us apart. So I got to tell you, Colin Allred, take a look at his video.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.